On Tech News Today, we've got new details on the Apple Watch, and Jay-Z's new music service hits today, and a new sexist reality show is coming to Silicon Valley. We've got great journalists from CNET, 9to5 Mac, and USA Today, so stick around. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, March 30th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. Welcome to the show. Today, our co-anchor is CNET.com editor-in-chief Lindsay Turrentine. How you doing, Lindsay?
I'm doing great because I'm in Vegas on vacation, not for work.
That's an astounding that somebody, in a tech journalist, would actually go to Las Vegas for vacation. You must have kids.
I have kids. This was not my choice, but somebody convinced me by saying, you're not going to Vegas. You're going to the pool.
Yeah.
Which is
okay.
True.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing.
Good. All right. Well, I hope you enjoy the pool. Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Don't tell anybody about it. Unless something fun happens, and then you can tell people about it. Well, Lindsay, before the show started here, Elon Musk sent out a tweet hinting at a new product. What's interesting about this is you think, oh, a new car. But he said, no, it's not a car. He didn't say what it was going to be, but it was going to be unveiled at their at the Tesla Hawthorne Design Studio on Thursday at 8 p.m. on April 30th. Any thoughts on what this might be?
I have two guesses.
Okay.
Probably neither is right because Elon Musk loves to surprise everybody.
Yes.
One guess is something infrastructure-y for your home to connect with the car, like, I don't know, a really easy aftermarket solar solution.
Huh.
Could be something like that. Or it could be something a little bit more fun, like a motorcycle.
That would be cool. A motorcycle would be great. We have heard reports about a home battery, which sounds kind of compelling. I would agree with that. I think that the general consensus that's quickly forming around this tweet is that it will probably be a home battery. However, I think that one dark horse possibility is that they'll come out with a car charging battery that's portable. And the reason I say that is that Tesla had a lousy experience in China. Their sales were horrible in China. They thought they were, you know, it's a luxury item, it's a status symbol, and so the Chinese market will gobble it up. Well, it didn't happen. They're laying people off. They're closing things down in China because the Chinese are not buying it. And one of the reasons is that not enough Chinese people live in, you know, the sort of single family homes that you find in the United States where you can just build a charging station right into your garage, pull the car into the garage and so on. A lot of wealthy people in China live in apartments and places like that where there's really no place to put the charger. So I'm thinking there's got to be some way that Tesla's got to come up with a way to enable people who don't have a single family home to charge their Tesla.
I think that's it. Smart guess, partially because another tweet that Elon sent out this morning went something along the lines of, I have great expectations for our business in China, despite some mistakes that we've made. So he's talking about that simultaneously. That seems to make sense.
Interesting. Well, why don't we get into the actual news? 9to5 Mac's Mark Gurman has been revealing details all weekend about the Apple Watch buying process. Very fascinating stuff. And Mark joins us now to talk about his multiple exclusives. Welcome to you, Mark.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Glad you're here. Now, let's get right into the expensive end of this pool. Apple's gold edition version of the Apple Watch will famously cost between $10,000 and $17,000. You report $10,000 and $17,000. You reported that edition buyers will have a premium buying experience. Can you walk us through that experience?
Right. So they'll be doing a few things for those buying the higher-end edition watch. So first of all, no lines. If you're buying the Apple Watch edition, Apple's going to basically drop everything and come to serve you first in front of everyone buying the lower priced models. So no lines for you. Another thing they're doing is they're offering a third year of Apple Care on top of the 2 years that are already included if you buy the Apple Care Plus program. And as part of that, they're going to have a special Apple Watch Edition contact line. So it'll be a 24/7 concierge-like technical support service that you can call if you ever need help. Another thing they're doing is they're going to have a special Apple Watch Edition only try-on area inside of stores, and they're even going to bring out in some store some special chairs for you to sit on. They'll have padded mats for you to play with the watches on, and they'll really do everything to serve you as best as they can inside the stores. Another thing is they'll have a pre-sale consultation phone call or online chat with you so you can talk through the purchase before you go into the store to make it. Another interesting thing that we learned this weekend is that even though many Apple stores won't have the Apple Watch Edition at launch, Apple told employees it'll roll out gradually to all the stores over time, any Apple store will be able to order it in via a special secure courier service. So you can go to any Apple store, order the Apple Watch Edition, and it will be delivered securely to your store with an armed guard, and they'll store it in the safe for you until you're ready to come and pick it up. The appointments for the Apple Watch Sport and the stainless steel Apple Watch will go between 5 and 15 minutes. But for the Edition, they'll have sales appointments that go up to 1 hour in time. So basically a pretty different experience for those buying the gold model.
Wow. So, Mark, do you think that that third year of Apple Care is Apple's way of sort of hedging against the fear that this very expensive watch could not be perceived as a timeless timepiece, that it might sort of expire? Is that what they're doing, or are they just being good to their loyal customers?
I think a little bit of both. So the Sport and the stainless steel model each come with 1 year of Apple Care standard. And if you buy the Plus package, you can expand that to a second year of hardware technical support. For the Edition, it comes with 2 year standard, and you can purchase a third year with Apple Care Plus. So I think it's just an extra 1 year boost for those buying the more expensive model. It's integrated into the price point, but maybe a little bit of what you said as well in terms of trying to show that the watch will last a little bit longer than some people are expecting, or showing people that it's going to need support for a third year. So we'll see.
Now, I think a lot of us are, you know, who are planning to buy an Apple Watch, and I'm definitely going to be buying one. I'm just going to go in and buy one for myself, maybe one for my wife, definitely one for my wife, actually. But will Apple offer special business pricing and financing or bulk discount options for the Apple Watch like they do with other products?
No, not at launch. Like, so for the iPhone, iPad, and Mac, if you go in as a business, you could buy a whole bunch of them and get a special discounted rate through the Apple business team in the individual stores. But because of supply constraints and the nature of the watch being a new category for Apple, they won't offer any of those special discounts for the time being. Maybe in the future, maybe for a future generation, but for now, they're not going to. It would have made sense because I wouldn't be surprised if whole entire businesses would want to buy their entire staff a bunch of Apple Watches. You know, for instance, like BuzzFeed a few months ago promised if they hit certain benchmarks, their whole staff an Apple Watch. So maybe they'll have to work out something special. But as of now, there's not going to be any business bulk discounts.
What about the trade-in program, Mark? You know, in the past, Apple customers have been able to trade in older phones for credits toward new ones or credits toward MacBooks. I hear that's not happening this time. Can you give us those details?
Sure. So today, Apple launched a revamp of its iPhone trade-in program for retail stores. And for the first time, they'll be accepting BlackBerries, Windows phones, Androids, Samsungs, and such toward the purchase of a new iPhone. That new wrinkle there that you mentioned for the Apple Watch, however, is that you can't trade in an iPhone or Android or whatnot, get a gift card, and use that toward the purchase of an Apple Watch. You can only use the remainder of the gift card. So let's say you get $250 for your iPhone 5. And then you spend $200 of the gift card towards an iPhone 6, you can use the remaining $50 towards an Apple Watch, but you can't use the entire $250 towards the watch.
Well, they sound strict. Man, if you get an Apple Watch, it sounds like you're going to be lucky. Now, you suggested that supplies of the Apple Watch might be limited. What do you recommend for people to do who want one right away?
Right. So we reported last week on Friday that Apple Watch sales will only be available to those in stores who place a reservation. Some sites are reporting that this week, but that's Friday's news from us. So if you want one, you're bound to make a reservation in an Apple store or order it online and have it shipped to you. But don't expect to be able to walk in and just buy one without an appointment.
Mark, which watch are you going to buy?
I really like the stainless steel black on black one. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's, it looks like a good one. Mark Gurman is at 9to5mac.com, and you can follow him on Twitter, and you should follow him on Twitter at Mark Gurman. His last name is spelled G-U-R-M-A-N. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Have a good one.
Take care. Let us know what you think about the upcoming Apple Watch and the retail process by sending us email to tnt@twit.tv. We want to hear your opinion on all this. Got some more news for you in just a sec, but first let's talk about Prosper. Prosper is the modern, kind of the Silicon Valley way to borrow money. You don't want to go to a bank. You don't want to borrow it from relatives and family members and so on. And that's just the wrong way to borrow money. What you want to do is borrow it from an investor, somebody who's going to invest in you and your project. Prosper will let you borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days. You get a low fixed rate loan. You can pay off high-rate credit cards. You can fix up your house. You can start a new business. There's lots you can do with this money. Don't rack up more debt on your credit cards. You can instead do the opposite. Pay them off with a loan from Prosper. To check your low rate instantly without affecting your credit score, go to prosper.com/twit. And now, for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers and listeners a $50 Visa gift card with your low-interest loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days and a $50 Visa gift card. Go to prosper.com/twit for this special offer just for Twit listeners and viewers. Well, we told you on January 30th that rapper and music mogul Jay-Z intended to buy a streaming service called Tidal. Well, today Tidal is being relaunched at an event in New York City at 5 p.m. Eastern. Mike Snyder is a tech reporter for USA Today and joins us now to talk about Tidal. Welcome to you, Mike.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Now, Tidal has apparently gotten some major artists to offer exclusive content, at least for a certain amount of time. Can you talk about that?
Well, we're not really going to know what's going on until 5 o'clock, but they're starting to post little hints on their Facebook page. If you go to Tidal, T-I-D-A-L, on Facebook, I didn't get to hear the audio, but while I was waiting, I was watching the video, and you're seeing people like Madonna and Kanye West, and looks like the lead singer of Coldplay. So they're it looks like they're going to insinuate that they have all, you know, the big names across many genres, providing not only, you know, high-resolution music. So this, the music is supposedly, I mean, statistically, it's better than you'd get on Spotify or Pandora or elsewhere. So you're not only going to have their music, but you'd also have, you know, maybe remixes or interviews or special content. They're realizing that to have a paying subscription, they need to do more to get consumers involved.
So how are they? There are a lot of big name artists involved, and they all seem to be promoting it. I guess, how are they promoting it, and why do they care so much? Can you talk a little bit about why the industry wants us to move to paying for those streams?
Well, because they want the money. Well, as you know, CD sales have, you know, fallen through the floor. And there's so many people listening to music free that they're finding their, how do we get them to pay? Because, you know, you've seen artists like Taylor Swift famously has not allowed her music on Spotify. Why would she not want to do that? Well, because, you know, only one fourth of Spotify's members are paying members. So you're only getting very granular amounts of money in their terms. I would also say to Taylor Swift's benefit, she's probably doing it to make a statement too. You know, she's one of the biggest sellers of, it may be the biggest seller of physical media, meaning CDs. So when she says something, people listen. So the idea is to try to get music listeners used to paying for music on some level in the streaming world. It may be one of those cases where, you know, the genie's out of the bottle already, you know, to use a cliche, which I usually try not to do when I'm writing, but I enjoy it when I'm talking. but to try to move the line of scrimmage forward, you know, for the future. Tidal charges about $20 a month, $19.99 a month. If you want to check it out, you can get a 7-day trial. But that's probably the most expensive music streaming service. But the sound quality is the equivalent of you playing your CDs at home, whereas Spotify, Beats, and Pandora and other streaming services are not at that level of bit rate and sampling rate. So you should hear a difference.
So Mike,
this service,
go ahead, Lindsay.
This service is already live, right? Have you listened to it by chance? And do you think it actually does sound better? I mean, I often wonder about bandwidth concerns. It's hard enough to keep a Skype call stable. Is this gonna actually work when there are lots of people using it?
That's a good question. It looks like, speaking of streaming, we may have lost my beautiful mug on here. So that actually, you may be doing your viewers a favor.
We still got a still picture of your beautiful mug on the screen. Right. So go for it.
Good. So I have listened to this. I have not hooked it up at home to listen. Right now, you can. There's a beta version of it playing through Sonos. I think what really matters is what are you listening to this through? You know, if you're listening to, you know, a 5-inch little sound bar, you may not tell, you know, a Bluetooth device or whatever, you may not tell a difference. If you're listening to it through a Sonos system or some of the other, I wouldn't call them high-end audio, but, you know, speaker companies. So we used to buy real speakers and real components. Those companies still make products, and they're making them for this new modular music listener. I can tell a difference when I'm listening to Tidal on my computer using headphones versus listening to my iTunes collection or to Pandora or Spotify. Now, you might say, how much of that's in my mind and how much of that, you know, is it I want to hear a difference? Well, there could be a bit of that. But, you know, scientifically, you're getting more of the music. And there's an interesting little demo on Tidal. If you go to the website, they kind of show you what it sounded like if you were listening on an iTunes level or a Spotify level on what was what was cut out of that recording because of the sampling issues.
Now, of course, this announcement isn't going to take place for a few more hours, and so we don't know all the details, and we also don't know all the details of Apple's forthcoming streaming service. But from what we can tell and what has been leaked out and rumored and so on, it seems to me that they have very similar strategies. They're going to try to provide high-quality sound and also exclusivity with artists. So it's really, to a certain extent, down to Jimmy Iovine versus Jay-Z, seeing who they can sign up to provide exclusive content. Can you very briefly compare and contrast what we know about the Apple strategy versus the Tidal strategy?
Well, again, we don't know much, and I'm not tapped into the music industry because I'm more of a tech writer now than an entertainment writer like I used to be. But it's one thing that the New York Times story said was that, and I've talked to other people recently, including Paul Reznikoff at Digital Music News, is that the record companies are trying to get to the point where we would have no free streaming. Whether that'll ever happen, we don't know. So the Apple tried to get their service to undercut Spotify to try to get the record companies to take less money, and that didn't work, evidently. So they're evidently going to have a similar priced product as Spotify. We don't know what the sound, you know, the quality level is. Will it get to the Tidal level, or will they try to stick with what you would call CD quality versus full true CD level sound? In Tidal's case, they're going to set the bar high. They're going to, you know, you would pay twice as much. So they're going to appeal to, you know, semi-audiophiles or people who have systems set up at home. They may appeal to the non-Apple people of the world. You know, you might tend to go to Apple's service whenever it comes out. If you're an Apple person, it just makes things easier to go. So I could see these two living synergistically for a while until, you know, at some point maybe one takes over. We're not sure, but there in video game industries, there's two or three game systems. I could see something like this playing out, in the music industry. Now, what happens to Spotify? That's a good question. A lot of this, we're going to have to see it play out.
Well, it all sounds interesting, no pun intended, and we'll look for to see how this happens. We do know that Apple paid a heck of a lot more for Beats. Of course, they came with headphones as well than Jay-Z did for this Tidal service. Mike Snyder is at usatoday.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Mike Snyder. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
The Washington Post yesterday published an opinion piece by Apple CEO Tim Cook slamming so-called religious freedom laws that could lead to discrimination against gay people. Cook singled out new laws in Indiana and Arkansas that allow anyone to use their religious beliefs as a justification for, example, not serving a customer. He also mentioned another in Texas that would take away the salaries and pensions of any clerk who issued a marriage license to a same-sex couple. Cook called on everyone to join a movement in opposition to such laws. You know, it's really interesting because, Lindsay Turrentine, these laws have been going into effect. They've been passing through legislatures. There's more than 20 now, I think. And people aren't really paying attention. The proponents of the law are saying, well, this doesn't really change anything. This kind of reflects what the federal laws are. But inside, in the fine print, there are little loopholes in there that enable people who want to discriminate against gay people or just about any people, as long as they can justify it on religious grounds. And so this has really raised a lot of awareness about this issue.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the person who really started getting some attention on this is Mark Benioff from Salesforce, who said that he would just essentially stop doing business in some of these places. And I kind of feel like what's interesting about Tim Cook's letter is that it's very strongly worded. And he takes a very strong stand and he says it's on behalf of Apple, but he doesn't go so far as to say that Apple will not do business in states that enact these laws. So it could have been stronger. And I kind of wonder what calls were made to him before he decided to write this and how he decided to thread this needle.
Yeah, absolutely. And he doesn't do this kind of thing very often, which makes it much more effective when he does do it. And he's kind of in an interesting position because in addition to being the CEO of the world's most successful company, he's also openly gay now. So he came out of the closet a few months ago, I guess. And so he's in that position. He also grew up in the South, and he talked a lot about some of the racial discrimination laws that were, you know, the law of the land in the South when he was growing up as a kid. So he's in a really interesting position to talk about this, and it was a very nice, short, concise, and passionately written op-ed in the Washington Post, Jeff Bezos's newspaper, by the way, and so it was really interesting to see that. You just don't see this kind of thing coming out of Tim Cook very often. Well, Amazon, speaking of Jeff Bezos, Amazon today announced a new on-demand service called Amazon Home Services, which is an invite-only marketplace that offers hand-picked professionals to provide cleaning, TV installation, painting, plumbing, that sort of thing. Amazon Home Services is now available in New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, of course, and other major cities. Lindsay Turrentine, why the heck would Amazon want to get into this sort of business? They kind of specialize in actual products that can be shipped.
Well, I, for one, am thrilled that they are doing it because I think they have found a hole that needs to be filled. There are one-off services that are trying to disrupt certain industries, like home cleaning. There's, I think it's called Home Joy. There are a lot of different cleaning services and single-track, service-oriented startups. But I find it very difficult, even in a large urban area, to find these professionals off of Craigslist. And Craigslist doesn't really have a vetting process. It's just there or it isn't. And otherwise, you kind of go ask your friends. And sometimes your friends have recommendations, sometimes they don't. So I think this is a really smart way for Amazon to just find a problem and jump in and fix it. I haven't gotten my invite yet, though, so I'm pretty disappointed.
Well, you're in Vegas. Who knows what's happening back at home? So, you know, and you make a good point. You go to Craigslist and you don't know who these people are. It's just somebody who posted an ad, and anybody can post an ad on Craigslist. Whereas in this case, they're actually claimed to be handpicking the service providers. They have 700 professional services. I guess those are different categories of service. And they're backed by Amazon's happiness guarantee. This is the thing that really sets it apart from Craigslist. Amazon is guaranteeing the work. So that's, I think, a really interesting differentiation. And, you know, like you say, nobody else is providing this kind of service, and it's probably a needed one. Well, in product update news, the current beta of Google's Chrome OS, which is the operating system, of course, that runs on Chromebooks, now has a new default screen called the Chrome Launcher 2.0. The new interface puts Google Now as the centerpiece of the screen. The beta also extracts password-protected zip files, changes time zones automatically, and has a lot more material design interface updates, that, as you might expect. But Lindsay Turrentine, the big star of the show here is Google Now, and I think that's awesome. I mean, the big problem with Google Now is that it's always kind of like you forget about it. It's, you know, whether it's on your phone or whatever, it's easy to just forget that it's there. At least I forget about it. But if you're a Chromebook user, you're not going to be able to forget, because every time you turn that thing on, there's Google Now.
Well, here's why I think it's such a genius business move. Chromebook users, I think if you were going to, if you did the math, you would probably find that most Chromebook users are students. Chromebooks are huge in public school systems, are huge at universities. And what a better way for Google to train people to know what Google Now is and to remember it and to sort of see its usefulness than to put it in the middle of the start screen.
Yeah.
It's really smart.
I'd like to have that on my MacBook. You know, it's like it'd be great to just open the computer and just have, you know, the entire screen taken over by Google Now reminders. Because again, I forget about them all the time. I'd love to have them front and center on my experience. Maybe I'll switch to Chromebook. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe that's the point.
Really? Are you going to really?
I'm always on the fence between a MacBook and a Chromebook Pixel. I wouldn't get, I'd have to have the Retina quality display. Of course, Google doesn't call it Retina quality display, but it's a high quality display on the Pixel. But yeah, I would love one, especially the new one.
I knew the world was ready for it when I actually once reached out to touch the screen of my MacBook.
Yeah.
As if to do something and realize, yeah. Oh my God, it's here. I do it all the time.
I'm touching the screen anyway. I might as well get a screen that will actually do something when I touch it. Well, in hack attack news, the social coding site GitHub has been suffering a massive DDoS attack coming from China, according to the Wall Street Journal. The attack is targeting two GitHub pages that linked to copies of websites that are banned by the Chinese government. The attack began Thursday and still continues. In a blog post, GitHub said that they're now deflecting most attack traffic, but the site is still suffering from intermittent problems. You know, you can never really get to the bottom of these hack attacks. It's too easy to cover your tracks, but this looks like the Chinese government censoring globally.
Yes, it does. And I really have anything else to add other than that China's ability to do this is really scary. And what's even scarier is China's willingness to do it.
Yeah. And Russia is another one that's in there that loves the Chinese model of using hacking as an instrument of public policy. Of course, the U.S. has its own variant of that. Well, in courtroom drama news, the venture capital company Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield & Byers was cleared Friday of gender discrimination and retaliation against Ellen Pao. A San Francisco-based jury rejected all claims against Kleiner Perkins, which is the VC firm that initially backed Google and Amazon. Although Kleiner Perkins won the case, the company's reputation was tarnished by facts of blatant sexism that emerged in the trial. Nobody won this case. Lindsay Turrentine, the jury apparently felt that Ellen Pao was terminated and all the things that she claimed were the result of gender discrimination was actually poor performance on her part or could have been poor performance on her part. And so that's why they ruled the way they did. This doesn't solve anything in terms of the legal aspects of sexism and rampant sexism in Silicon Valley, but I think it goes a long way toward raising awareness. What's your take on this?
I have the same take you do. You said there were no winners. And I think there were a couple of winners. I don't remember which publication it was. It was either Mashable or BuzzFeed had a great piece of writing. Maybe it was Recode. I'm not sure. About the almost all female press corps covering this event, which was great visibility for women in the tech world, or at least the tech journalism world, which I obviously care about. But also, I think it just goes as a reminder to a lot of Silicon Valley firms that whether or not you are at fault, you need to be careful about how you're treating anybody in your workplace because anything you say or write or do could end up on a projector screen in a courtroom someday. And it's a very important reminder, and it's one more step toward making sure that there's awareness. So I think we got something out of it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Well, we've got one big number for you today. That big number is 20,338,986. That's how many dollars Pebble raised on Kickstarter for the Pebble Time Watch. The amount makes Pebble Time the most successful Kickstarter ever. Their initial goal was $500,000 or so they claim. And now this puts the original Pebble as the number three most successful Kickstarter ever. This is really interesting, Lindsay Turrentine, because here is an established company that started on Kickstarter. They had a very successful product, one of the most successful Kickstarter products ever. And now they're an established company that's getting outside, venture capital, essentially. And they went ahead and did a Kickstarter anyway. And a big reason for that, clearly, is it was a great publicity stunt, essentially, to raise $20 million. Everybody's talking about it. And it just basically, it's an affirmation of how much their fan base loves their product.
Yeah, I mean, what company can say we met our goal and exceeded it by 4 times? And I feel like a lot of people participate. The timing was really good before the Apple Watch actually arrives, but yes, there's a lot of hype. This is like the vote against the Apple Watch. This is the anti-Apple Watch investment. There are a lot of people out there thinking, I want something different. I want some real competition. And so they're backing this Kickstarter goal, which really does make it feel like a collaborative effort.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right about that. It's Apple has come along, and I think the consensus was starting to form and gel around the idea of, well, it's over for Pebble, because now the Apple Watch is coming. And as soon as the Apple Watch is here, it's just going to wash away these products like the Pebble. But Pebble's big message is, hey, man, people are throwing money at us. They love us. And so, you know, the Apple Watch can, you know, is going to have some real competition. And, you know, in fact, one of the big complaints about the Apple Watch is going to be battery life. And Pebble is always going to kick their butts on battery life. So that is really interesting that they did that. And that's a lot of money, too. They can probably use that money. Well, in news you can lose, a casting flyer is circulating in the Bay Area for a new reality show segment that might be called The Girlfriends of Silicon Valley. This is right after the Ellen Powell case. The flyer asks, quote, are you a confident, glamorous, and outgoing woman who's dating or married to someone working in the tech industry? Do you have a fabulous lifestyle, a great group of friends, and live life to the full? Unquote. The show is being cast by the UK production company called The Connected Set. And gosh, have we learned nothing, Lindsay Turrentine? This is an actual show built around the insult that women in technology face all the time, which is that they go to tech events and somebody says, oh, are you here with your boyfriend?
I'm almost rendered completely inarticulate by this particular thing. The cycles of rage went kind of like, that's ridiculous, it can't be true. And then let's revoke their UK, their visas to work in the US. And then I think what we should do is every single woman working in the tech space who is also married to a man working in the tech space should show up for this. And it should be like VP level and above married women.
Yeah.
And we should just walk up there and be like, hey, here I am. Make a show about me.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do it. Let's start a movement.
I don't have time for that.
Nobody's got time for that. Too busy doing your job. What a concept. Maybe Hollywood should look into that. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Kyle Koh, who posted this amazing picture on Twitter. Kyle writes that he's on his first trip to China, where he visited the Longhua Temple in Shanghai, but he didn't forget to watch TNT. They were right there in the landscaping. Awesome. He posted some other pictures from China as well with Tech News Today playing on his various devices. Well, how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or set up and post it on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. Lindsay Turrentine, what are you going to do when you get back from Vegas? You're there all week or what's going on?
Just here for a few days and I'm not in Vegas. I'm at the pool.
I see. You're at the pool. I see. Yes. I see.
When I come back, I'm going to go to work.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to reading your work when you get back. So thank you for doing the show while you're on vacation. Really appreciate it. And we will see you next time.
See you soon.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on the podcast app of your choice. You can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv or on the app or browser plugin of your choice. If you're ever in the greater Petaluma area, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. And you can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. And you can follow me via RSS. It's actually my Google Plus feed via RSS. You ready for this? Get a pencil. It's feeds.feedburner.com/Mike Elgin-Google User Feed. Yeah, that's an RSS feed for my Google Plus feed. Amazing. Let us know what you think. Send us an email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. My name's Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.